Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty, hosted by Jody Katz, founder and creative director of Base Beauty Creative Agency.
Hello, Where Brains Meet Beauty listeners. Thanks for joining the show. And I am with our director of business development at Base Beauty. Her name is Caitlin. Hi, Caitlin.
Hello, Jody. Excited to be back here today.
Well, we have a lot to talk about. This is a good episode. But first, I want to talk about something that our whole team is buzzing about, which is our recent product launch campaign for Zio Skin Health, their new Sunshade SPF collection. And I have a lot of FOMO for not being in Dallas for the launch events.
I know. It was, the pictures are incredible. Every little detail, the flowers being blue, the Zio Skin Health sign, the skyline in Dallas, just it looked like such an incredible event. I know the team got such positive feedback already.
We have a lot of incredible data already rolling in about this launch. It's become one of the big, I think the biggest launch for Zio ever, the most amount of velocity on the D2C, the most demand by physicians to sell the products. So we'll collect all that data and share that with our fans on LinkedIn. What I want to just focus in on is something that we talk a lot about with our clients, which is activating in markets beyond LA and New York. Yep. And we chose to start our campaign in Dallas. And the Dallas physicians and the Dallas influencers were really appreciative and excited about this.
Yeah, it's definitely important, I feel like, to, you know, go to these markets where the consumers are, right? So finding the right influencers, and we had amazing co-hosts for this event, the two Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. And again, the feedback from influencers and the sales team of just being like, thank you for coming to our market is so important. And it's definitely a learning we've had here at Base Beauty that we've brought into, you know, all of these different events that we do for our clients.
Thanks for mentioning the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. So we had two that we partnered with as co-hosts, and the timing is so cool because their new Netflix docuseries is coming out in like a week, and it's season three, and I watched season one and two, and it's so good.
It's such a good show. And that, I do think, Jody, I have to mention, is a testament to putting our clients at the center of culture, right? So being able to launch this event right before, you know, a new season of a huge Netflix show, really just the timing couldn't be better. And the team just did such an amazing job with this event.
And I want to give a shout out to dermatologist Dr. Diane Davis. She was our co-host for our physician event in Dallas, and she's very talented. We've worked with her many times before. Yeah. And at the event, well, first of all, she dressed in a very Zio blue dress. It's horrible. And then she took it upon herself to swatch all six shades on her arm and basically like wore the swatches around the event all night long, making sure that all the physicians in the room could see the adaptability and shade range, which is amazing.
Like, honestly, such an incredible partner to have. And I've met her. She's just such a lovely person, and she's just so good at what she does. So it was awesome that she was there for this.
Well, enough bragging for now. Yes. Okay, if you want to hear more bragging, go to LinkedIn.
Yes, we'll be there very soon.
So let's talk about who we have on the show today. So first off, this is a special episode for me because Lauren Katz, head of brand marketing at Meva, is actually cousin Lauren. So she's my cousin by marriage. And Lauren was actually early days first employee at Base Beauty. So really proud to be part of Lauren's success story. She was a huge contributor to me very early in the agency. And she's joined with her COO at Meva, David Chipoff. So here we talk about, of course, early jobs and how they can shape future success and lessons about discipline, communication, and problem solving.
Yeah. No, David and Lauren, you know, one thing to note is they actually worked together previously. So they came back and now are partnering together at Meva, and they really bring different skill sets to the table. But together, they're really helping build this brand that resonates deeply with consumers while staying strategically focused for long-term growth.
I'm glad you mentioned that David and Lauren worked together. So Lauren worked with me for many years, and then she got a job at Moroccan Oil, and she worked there for many, many years. And David was the head of marketing there. And it just makes me so proud because I love it when young people at Base Beauty like learn a lot, build a ton of skills, an incredible foundation, and go off somewhere amazing and contribute in a huge way to this organization. So I see that as part of my success story too.
Yeah, no, you definitely should. You know, that leadership and mentorship, right, that we hear all the time on the podcast. So it's definitely part of your story. And you know, it's, you can see what they've built at Moroccan Oil, right? So we know that they're going to build something amazing at Meva together. And, you know, David really being that the theme was shelf strategy. He, you know, offers an inside look at product strategies, shelf positioning, and the decision-making process behind building such a successful beauty brand. But meanwhile, Lauren brings a consumer perspective, discussing how authenticity, emotional connection, and storytelling really create that loyalty in an increasingly crowded marketplace that we all know of.
So we learn the origin story of Mother, which is really helpful because every time I say it, I'm like, yes. now I get it. So it actually started as a brand to service new mothers, and now it has a much broader audience, but, you know, completely still loyal to their original mission.
Yes. And, you know, as always, you know, we go beyond business and we get a little personal. You know, Lauren and David opened up about balancing demanding careers with family life, managing stress, setting boundaries, and just finding ways to stay grounded in a fast-moving industry.
What a great full circle moment for me to watch, because when Lauren worked with me, my kids were teeny tiny. And now has two kids who are teeny tiny, right? So I've been there. It's not easy, but, you know, now my kids are 18 and 15, so I can say it gets a lot easier.
Yes. No, it was nice to hear you both, you know, speak of being in motherhood at different periods and balancing your careers. But with that, you know, here's episode 310 with David Chipoff and Lauren Katz.
I want to take a pause and thank CEW, who is our partner in this series. CEW is where beauty comes together. And I am sitting with Lisa Campione. She's the director of events at CEW, and we have a message for you.
As the beauty, health, and wellness industry's largest member community, CEW connects more than 6,000 leaders across brands, retailers, suppliers, technology, and media.
I've been a member for, I want to say 15 years, although it's 16 or 17. And I think I can see how long I've been a member on the site, right? If I go back to my page, so I'm going to look. But CEW is so impressive. Through high impact events, industry insights, and professional development, members gain access to the relationships, knowledge, and opportunities shaping the future of beauty.
Discover how CEW can accelerate your career at CEW.org and use code WBMB20 for 20% off of your first year of membership.
Welcome to Where Brains Meet Beauty. We are here exploring the world of mother with David Chipoff, COO, and Lauren Katz, head of brand marketing, and my cousin. Did you guys know that? No. Okay, so you're going to get ignored for a second, David. So we have to go a little bit down memory lane. I'm married to Lauren's cousin by blood, David, and I think I met Lauren when I was, well, she was 13, mm-hmm. and I was 26, because I know I'm 13 years older than you, mm-hmm. and I was at your bat mitzvah, mm-hmm. and the other fun fact is Lauren used to work at Base Beauty so many years ago.
Employee number one.
Right. Well, is it a full-time employee? I made you a full-time employee?
Yes.
So you were my first full-time employee ever. Oh my God, that was a big deal. Like getting to the point where I could have an employee. Mm-hmm. So I just want to go back in time. So your mom was just chatting with me and she's like, oh yeah, Lauren needs a job. And I'm like, well, maybe she can work with me. Mm-hmm. And this was so early days. And now look at her. I'm so proud. So how would you summarize that, I guess, a year-ish at being at Base Beauty?
Well, when I started, it was JMK Creative.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
We formed Base Beauty. I remember, like, the evolution of the name, and it was great. It totally set the trajectory of my career. And my next job after that, I remember looking at the job description and saying, this is exactly what I do. It's like a full, a 360 role, and I didn't think that existed anywhere else, and it did.
Well, I'm very proud of you, and it makes me so happy to see your success. And I can't wait to learn about your role at Mother, and I want to make sure I pronounce it right. So am I doing a good job?
Beautiful.
Okay. So David, this is the first time we're meeting, so I want to get to know you, and we're going to start at the beginning. This is a career journey show. We start at that like little idea that's in our heads when we're 10, 11, 12 years old. So David, you're a little kid. What do you want to be when you grow up?
I had no idea, really. Even late 20s. It's probably when I started to make some sense of what I wanted.
Okay, so were you like skateboarding, surfing? Like what was going on in your life?
That's exactly it. I wanted to play. I was just playground. And I was not a good student actually at that age.
So what was the first job you had that you made money at?
A masher in a theater. And that was when I was still in college.
Okay. And were you able to have a discipline at that job?
Learn discipline?
Well, like actually showing up on time. And
oh, yeah, you had to. Otherwise, you're out.
And Lauren, was Base Beauty the first job you had?
I was a camp counselor, so we can include that, but yes.
Okay, so what, Lauren, what is the thing that you learned working at Base Beauty first year that you still use in your career today?
Oh, pick up the phone and call someone. It was one of the first things you taught me. I was young, and I was, like, scared to pick up the phone. Pick up the – you need something done, pick up the phone and call someone.
I feel like I say that – okay, so Nicole, who's on my team, is in the audience, and I was, like, call the messenger. And she's looking at me like I'm crazy. And you actually said something like,
I didn't know.
Like, I have to actually pick up the phone and call. I'm like, life lesson, here we go.
And now I say it all the time.
Yeah.
Did you call?
So, Lauren, when you were really little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
A teacher.
Of what?
Like a kindergarten teacher, young, nothing above like six. I wanted to be a teacher. And then I wanted to go to cosmetology school.
And did you ever go to there?
No, my parents told me I had to go to college. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll go to college. But I wanted to be in beauty of some sort. And I didn't think that existed in the corporate world, or I didn't know how it existed. There was you.
So, David, you said it wasn't until like your late 20s where you started to get some focus in what a career could look like for you.
Right.
What crystallized for you, and why do you think that's started to shape in your mind?
So in my 20s before that, I had to make a decision where to go to college. And it was science seems to be the natural path. I enjoyed physics. I was good with math. The best university was close to where I lived. I applied, I got accepted, and I was just going with the flow. But it was actually more of, I was going with the flow for a while, because even after I graduated, it was either taking a year off and go to Ibiza and have fun, or just playing it safe. And I did. And I went into other jobs in engineering, and it got very technical. And going back to your question, it was when I felt like one part of my brain was happy, not the other. It seems like I needed colors. And with maturity, I came to realize that that was marketing. And marketing, particularly either in the space of fashion or in the space of beauty. So it's sort of the opposite extremes of objectivity, subjectivity, analytical intuition.
So what part of your brain was happy at that time?
The analytical, the objective, the rational, the logical.
And the creative side was sad.
It was not sad, but it was something was missing. I was missing colors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it makes sense, but...
And where did you find them? Like, what was that role where you're like, oh, this makes sense for me?
So, precisely digging in and marketing seemed to be the right route. I made a decision to do an MBA. This was after I did a master's in engineering and went back to school as an MBA, but focused on marketing. And that's simply what launched my career in the beauty space.
Basically. So what was that first job then after the MBA?
So Davines is an Italian company, and they do hair care and body care for spa. So it's a professional brand. So they were crazy enough to give a chance to a rocket scientist that wanted to play marketing.
So Lauren, your COO seems very mellow and chill and spoke about, you know, like being that way. Is he that way in the work?
That's a great question. His energy is, yes, but his brain is always, like, on. But his energy tries to be very mellow.
Okay, and what about when there's, like, a crisis, like supply chain or tariffs or any of this stuff?
What's his energy?
Yeah, like, is he able to be that laid, because, like, I'm getting so much laid back, like, sitting by the ocean vibes.
Yes and no. Well, I think the analytical side and the logical side, there's always like, you know, he stops and he says, okay, what makes sense in this moment? And he just sticks to the facts and doesn't, you know, bring emotion into it. So in that sense, yeah,
that's one thing engineers do pretty well. Problem, solution, problem, solution. Mm-hmm. So it's the mindset you learn from the beginning. You give him problems to solve.
So let's talk about this theme of shelf strategy. You had asked me over text, like, does it count? We know we're a digital shelf, right? Mm-hmm. And it absolutely does. Of course, this is where business is done today. Mm-hmm. And you are a emerging brand, right? Like in the room today, there's going to be a lot of emerging brands. Brands are sort of just like starting to hit their stride and understand the need they fill. So, you know, we'll start with you, David. What does it take in terms of like a timeline to get an idea to your digital shelf live?
So from the very beginning or how we go?
Okay. Yeah, like the, you know, there's someone thinks of something, right? There's an inspiration.
Yeah. in terms of a product, when we look to explore for products, I think that there's two parts to that question. The obvious one, which is needs to align with the brand positioning, needs to align with the vision you have with your of your customer. And then there's the second frame, which kind of brings some sense to prioritize, bring strategy into if it makes sense to do it. And if it does, then the when. So that's the two frames that we go for.
And Lauren, who is your customer?
Great question. I'd say anyone who, I mean, I can give you the demographics, but I'm my customer. I'm our customer. I think the brand started as the idea was a baby and me company. And a lot of why it's evolved from that is all of these mommy and me companies are very soft and very fluffy. And I think you really start to learn that when you become a mom and you're starting to see this marketed, this product's the exact same way over and over and over, and you're just craving this like realness from a brand that gets it. That is our customer. That is when I first learned about Mother. I was like, oh, it's so cool. You know, it's almost like a breath of fresh air. And the customer who wants efficacy, obviously, and trustworthiness, but can understand the brand at that level and connect with the brand is our customer.
So is the brand like that friend in your friend group who like gets real?
The brand is the friend in your friend group who you go to for advice, for credibility, is asking the questions. It's like the connector, the influencer of your group. Mm-hmm. That's the brand.
So, okay, I heard what it takes to get a product into the world, but what does it take to market to this audience?
Well, interestingly enough, a lot of our recent launches have been very inspired, obviously, by our founder, and she launches them. They're all based on a need. All of these products are coming from some reason. And the story is really truthfully told. And I've had experiences, you know, in the past where it's here's the marketing notes and here's the ingredients. That's not what we're doing. We're really speaking from a place of this is why we launched it. This is why you need it. This is why it's better than something on your vanity. And the story starts to tell itself.
Can you just give me the story behind the brand and this unusual name? David, you want to take that one?
Sure. So she alluded to the founder, Hope Smith, and when she was pregnant, she's an esthetician, and she felt, or she was very concerned about developing stretch marks. And she used her esthetician skills to formulate something for her own in her kitchen. And of course, you cannot buy raw materials in small size, but the gallon size. And so at the end of the day, what happened is she ended up with so many body butters after hundreds of iterations. And she gave those away to friends, and friends started to knock at the door. I have another friend that is pregnant. This is amazing for preventing stretch marks. And until a point where she realized that this needed to be scaled up. And so that's where I got involved, actually, when the brand was not born yet. And I helped to figure it out what made sense from a white space perspective. I mean, the obvious would be, okay, pregnancy specific. But where other brands were focused on the Gen Zs, the millennials, and or in a very specific segment of the industry, we came to realize mothers are often forgotten. And so mother, the name mother, the slang for mothers, is obviously appeals to mothers, and is quite relevant for them. Although we built something so cool that appeals to a broader audience at this point.
So how did your founder find you?
This was a recruiter reached out to me, and this was during my time of precisely looking for what my next chapter was going to be. And I didn't know who the founder was or who the person behind it. I kind of understood the project a bit, what was in the mind. I reflected on the possibilities, and I said, well, I would be interested if this is what, if this vision is shared. And that's what happened.
And how many years has it been?
More than seven. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 6 years the brand, but we met a year and something before, and we worked together for almost a year before we launched.
And Lauren, after you left Base Beauty, you went to Moroccan Oil for many years. Mm-hmm. Why and how did you discover this role, and what spoke to you about it?
So I got the job at Moroccan Oil because of David. David was my boss at Moroccan Oil for many years, and I left when I had my first daughter. And it was during COVID, and I was like, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. Like, this is my destiny. I couldn't imagine the world of having kids and going to work, and there were two separate lives to me. Then I had my second daughter, and I was home for 4 years, and I was having, like, the itch, which I never thought I would. But again, I couldn't wrap my head around, like, the balancing act. It just was so – it was unfamiliar territory for me. And around the time I started getting the itch, David and I reconnected. He was looking for someone to help with the brand, and we talked at length. And the second I was familiar with it because he actually sent it to me when I was pregnant, but I wasn't deep into the brand. I understood the body butter. I started looking at the brand, and as someone who has a passion for branding, you look at this brand and it's hard to not want to dive in. It like has such a strong identity and such a cool story. And a lot of times when you're in a branding role, especially in beauty, it is hard to, you know, this department wants this and you have to be fun and you have to, that doesn't exist. It was such a strong story. And I related to it so much, and within, I don't know, 2 weeks, maybe I was back on board.
So you really are the customer. Yes. Like you're literally her.
Yeah.
How does that help you in the work that you do for the brand?
Well, I think a lot of it is intuition, but a lot of it is also knowing how I want to be spoken to, knowing what stands out. And I'm the customer, but I'm also very much a consumer of all things beauty. So, you know, I could tell you, oh, well, this brand's doing this and this brand's doing this. And this is, you know, you can kind of decipher what's going on in the space. And a lot of it is, and I think with all of our roles, a lot of it is really understanding who we are as a brand and then using our intuition and what makes sense for us. It's not that hard to navigate when you have such a strong brand identity.
I love that you both worked together years ago and now you're working together again. What's the same and what's different about working with each other? And I'll start with you.
The same is, obviously, she excels in many domains and very disciplined, very serious about what she does and committed. What's different is much more mature, I guess, professionally speaking, right? And your motherhood experience obviously made her fit in perfectly, and she feels the brand. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I would say that, no?
And Lauren, this is a very different organization than Moroccan Oil, right? Much smaller, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So what's different about working with David now versus then?
I think maybe just, yeah, to your point, like the structure of the organization, we worked closely in that capacity, but there was, you know, so many different players. Now we work very closely and hand in hand day to day. So a lot of it is the same. I mean, I do feel like I've known him for so long and he has not changed. But yes, maybe just the working relationship and what I'm doing and what he's doing and the intersection has become, you know, closer.
Right. So David, I never worked at Moroccan Oil. I'm just taking guesses here, but I would imagine like there's, like Lauren said, a lot of pressures, a lot of voices in the room, competing, you know, priorities, mm-hmm. You're global. I would imagine that this business, the structure you've created is very different. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about that experience there to like optimize what your brand could be today?
When I started with Moroccan Oil, they were successful already. The success very focused on few SKUs, but so it was getting to learn more from a branding point of view. How could that success be converted into a brand globally? And so I think that was a very good teachable moment, good experience. And I think the environment, yet it was very entrepreneurial as well. So it also lended itself to start a new company from zero. Mm-hmm. That is something that I took advantage of from that experience.
Yeah. How cool that you've already seen the progression of starting small to growing huge. It's like you've been on the road, mm-hmm. right? So you get to retrace the steps now. What did you learn through that experience in Moroccan Oil that you like absolutely know benefits you today?
I don't know if it's just one lesson or one experience. I think it's the aggregate of things. I think my trajectory going from engineering to marketing and then experiencing the world from different perspectives. That's what I gained the most. It's, you know, often we speak about skills necessary for performing well in a job, and that's great, but skills help you do things faster or easier when you learn them, but perspectives broadens your horizon, your field of view, and so it influences what you actually get to see and how you think about what you get to see.
So Lauren, on the theme of shelf strategy, what is your role in bringing products to market? You know, what is like literally the day-to-day? We have listeners who are trying to figure out what they want to do in their career. Mm-hmm. So
What are you doing every day?
I think this is maybe more unique, but there's really 4, 5, 6 of us involved day to day in the company. So we really do wear a lot of hats. We are doing a lot of things. Currently, we are launching a product next week. And so my day-to-day is a whirlwind of getting assets ready and what we're saying about it and how we're saying about it, how we're talking about it, and who's seeing it and who's getting it and when they're getting it, and really understanding, again, like the audience, how to speak to them, how to make this exciting. What else am I doing during the day? There's a lot. but that's kind of been my career up until now, is a little bit of a lot.
Right. It sounds not that different than what you had to do at Base Beauty, right?
Or Moroccan Oil, right. Yes.
So now that you're in this role and you were at Moroccan Oil for a long time, mm-hmm. What's easier now since you have that experience behind you?
Which job is easier?
No, like what task or like what in your day to day is like, okay, like.
Oh, like what this, has become easier? Yeah. I think the stress level, maybe just digesting the day to day, has changed as I have changed and my life has changed and I have, you know, kids now. The little things were always just, oh my gosh, I would lose sleep. I would wake up in the middle of the night. I should have wrote this email like this. Why didn't I do this? And now I care as much and I'm as passionate, but I am not as emotionally drained from it. You know, I just look at it as, we're going to move forward and this is it. And it's more fact-based and less emotion-based, maybe.
So has anyone in the room been in a situation recently where you've like literally lost sleep over something for work? Yeah, like everybody, yes. Right? me too. Although I can say the amount of time I spend obsessing about something is much shorter now. It's like, okay, that was shitty and I wish I did this or I wish I said this. And then it's poof. Like most of the time it's gone. Or like a call to my coach and then it's gone.
Yeah, right. And also just how fast moving our business is. You don't have time to do that and you have to show up for your team and you can't just be sucked into these holes all the time. So I don't know how, because I used to be the opposite of this. I used to be like consumed. I mean, weeks. Now, you know, you just keep going.
It's called wisdom.
Yeah, wisdom, right.
And character.
The wisdom, right? Like, that's why I do this show, and I've had it for 9 years, because it's, like, free business coaching, free therapy for me to help me sort of straighten out my head, which I think it's what happens when you care so much, right? Yeah. Like, you get really emotional about the work.
Yeah, and I don't think it's something that I could have, back then, trained myself to do. I think it just... it evolves with you, and you know, it's the mentality, and you grow, and I don't think it's something that you could switch on and off.
Yeah, maybe it's important that the early 20-year-old versions of ourselves were freaking out. Like, maybe that was important 100%. To the work at that time.
I cared so much, and I still do care so much, but the way in which I show up for caring is different. I used to, like, you know, I have 16 accidents that I'm cleaning up in, and then I'm fighting over getting the hair done, and all of this is happening before I show up to a meeting at 9 a.m., and then, you know, your perspective shifts. So I dealt with my craziness of this morning. This one is not going to suck the life out of me. I'll deal with that later. Maybe that'll be, like, my 3 o'clock, but, like, 9 o'clock, we're just going to keep, you know.
So that actually is a great transition to what I want to talk about, because I know you're an incredible mom. Yeah. What do you talk about work-wise to your girls? Like, what do they hear from you about what your work life is like?
That's such a good question. Well, one of them is too young to understand, except for just taking things off my vanity and constantly, you know, slopping them on her face and in her hair. My older daughter, you would think, would be more interested than she is. She knew me for her first 4 years of life being home with her. So the idea of work was confusing to her, and me being gone. She thinks that I make videos about makeup and talk about mother a lot. And anytime that we get anyone, we're going to get a gift for, like, her teacher, bring them some mother. Like, that's the extent of it. So, you know, I love that she can see not just her dad going to work, but her mom also going to work, whether or not she understands that now. I didn't have that, and I think it's cool for her to see.
She clearly has pride in the brand if she's really happy for you to gift it.
Totally. She tells her teacher about it.
That's so sweet.
You got her mother. I'm like, that's right.
So this brings up something for me that Willow, my daughter who you know, who you don't know, David, but she's 15. And like a couple years ago, she just made an offhand comment to me. And she's like, oh, you're working from, you're no, you're a stay-at-home mom. And I'm like, I am? But I literally like am at home. Like, we're only in the office one day a week. I'm literally at home, and I'm her mom. Mm-hmm. So she reframed what this term means. Like, mm-hmm. I am a stay-at-home mom. So I thought it was cool that, like, just by observing me, she completely reframed a phrase that's, like, very loaded for people, yeah. right? And yes. defined it in a completely different way, which I thought was so, so cool. Mm-hmm. So I guess we're all sort of doing that. We get to reframe and redefine, mm-hmm. you know, all these terms that we grew up with. Okay, so let's talk about the category and our jobs, like how we get through the day, because this industry is like crazy. I mean, does it feel crazier to you now, David, than it was like early days of Moroccan Oil in terms of competition, noise?
Oh, more competitive, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The landscape of competitiveness continues to increase, and it will continue to increase.
Sometimes I feel like I want to, like, I don't know what the best word is, like vomit the amount of noise that is like out there, yeah. right? It's just like so noisy. Everybody's trying to like just chase after the shiny thing. Mm. And you and your COO role, like how do you keep the team like focused and grounded in like the total mission and vision for the brand?
And I think there is an advantage in how we started, which was to clearly started with a product, but then building a brand around that and defining what that brand is and understanding what plays the brand plays and understanding what makes the brand meaningful and relevant to your audience. And I think that that helps frame your priorities. And there's temptation to do this, do that. And it goes back to also needing some objective views and frameworks of if it's about shelf strategy, is what is the priority, what's the strategy behind it. So never go away from the brand meaning and purpose, but also bring in some rigor, discipline to your decisions.
So I want to transition to some questions about like you as humans beyond work or how you become a human besides work. So David, we'll start with you. Like, what are your techniques for coping with the stress of the job?
I don't know if I have a technique. I think luckily I've been exposed to a lot of stress in my life, which is normal. Jobs in general should be stressful, should be challenging. I don't think of any job that is free of that. And that builds character. Precisely, you don't build character out of comfort moments or comfort zones. You build them with challenges, with pressures, when you face uncertainty. And I think that over the years, I've been able to experience that. And so it comes now. Of course, my background, problem solution, we talked about that. So it when there is that moment of challenge, stress, let's focus on the problem and therefore the solution. And so that it's just building a habit, a mindset, I suppose, that has helped me in that regard.
But you don't need to like go for a run, meditate, cold plunge. You know, I hear everything on this show. Like you don't have to go to.
I do go for a walk when I need creative thoughts to flow. There used to be a time where I would find solutions to complex problems when I'm sleeping. Weird.
But like that, in your dreams?
Yeah, but that was like very complex problems in engineering, but now it's more the creative movement helps get the thoughts going, circulation, I suppose. But yeah.
So Lauren, what are your stress coping techniques?
Oh, it's unhealthy, I'm sure.
Tell me.
Scrolling on, I know how you feel about it. I know, at night. But I don't have any because I don't feel like I have the time to stop and do anything mm-hmm. during the day. I like walk out of my office and into my kids, and I don't have time to even stop and process until 7:30 or 8. Mm-hmm. So it's unhealthy, but it's almost helpful that I don't have time to stop and be like, I just keep going.
So Lauren's referring to the fact that I delete that social media apps from my phone. I don't keep them there. Like I'll download it when I need it for work. Thankfully, I have a whole team of people who are, you know, love to be chronically online. I'll use it and I'll delete it and then I'll just reload it again next time I'm on it because I don't feel good when I'm just like watching this stuff.
I do. I really do.
What do you love about it?
I have no attention span, I feel like, at that time of day. So my husband always wants to watch a show. I'm like, I cannot sit there and watch a show. I need to just, it needs to be ch-ch-ch-ch. And then I need to be like completely distraction of everything that's happened during my day. Like, I want to watch like this person getting ready and this person like grooming her dog and this person's like body cam footage. Like, I need to, it needs to be, that's my page. That's like my distraction. My husband's like, this isn't good for you. I'm like, it is. I feel great right now and I'm happily going to sleep. So like.
So, I love that you found something that works for you.
Thank you.
I know you. There's no way for you to do this with the kids at their age right now, but in a few years, you will be able to do this. And this is a technique I like had to work on and build with a therapist. But, you know, the workday is so busy and I'm like actively listening all day long, working really hard to focus. So that's a lot of energy. And I'm really good at remembering things. So like there's a lot of, you know, things spinning here. So what I would typically do is like leave my desk in my office at home and then go downstairs and see the kids and they're like, what's for dinner, blah, blah, blah. And I just like felt like I cannot take it. So what I do instead now is I like walk away from my computer and then I go to my bed and I crawl under the covers and I turn on like 15 minutes of The Real Housewives or Below Deck or one of these shows and I just like watch and relax for like, I don't even need a lot of time, 10, 15 minutes. And it's my body's way to just like chill out and not hear the noise that's coming. Like I have noise from work and then there's the noise from the kids. And I need a break in between. So I know you can't do that yet because they're too little, but like maybe in a few years, like this is something that you can do. And then you don't need the scrolling. Like, oh, sometimes I read a book in those 15 minutes. I know you can't read a book right
like,
now.
Yeah. But also the fact that you can stop yourself at 15 minutes. Like I wouldn't be able, I would be, once I'm in the bed.
Right, because you're so hungry for like quiet
rest.
And like, no one coming at you. But my kids are much older than Lauren's. My son's 18. My daughter's 15. And I still have to teach my kids, like, when I come, like, in the door after a work day, like, tonight I'll come home. Like, you can't just jump on me with 1,000 questions. Like, you're not 4 years old anymore, right? You're not 7 years old. Like, I need you to, like, let me take my shoes off. Let me wash my hands. Let me, you know, change my clothes. And then, sure, I'll answer all of your questions. So it's a constant conversation because I want to help them, but I cannot help them in that moment.
Yeah. I actually have – I think that the way that I can manage it, it's two different types of – not stress necessarily, but just always on – is they're so different to me that, like, I used to say coming to work was a vacation, and I love my kids more than anything in the whole world. But, you know, you don't – you know, so – it's two different like worlds happening for me in the same day. They don't really blend into each other, you know? So like one part of my brain is on when I'm with my kids and one part of my brain is on when I'm at work and I can switch that off. So that I think is also how I manage it and not, I don't feel overwhelmed.
Okay. You
it.
Both gave me like the theme for the headline in this episode because you spoke about like half of your brain feeling a certain way and the other half, and then you just did the same. So thank you for that. We're going to move on to the last phase of our show, which is a game. This is a no wrong answer game. It's a, what would mother do is the title. You're going to pick the more mother coded option. I'm going to give you like a this or a that. So we're going to do what we did. Were you here for the last show? Okay. So in the last show, we did a lightning round where you're both going to answer at the same time and we'll see if your answers match. It doesn't have to, but it's fun to see. And these are all like packaging design related stuff since the brand is, you know, so critical in the story, right? Protecting that brand. Okay. So you ready for the first scenario? Okay. Glass bottle or soft touch plastic?
Glass bottle.
Wait,
can you say it louder? Can you both just say it louder, too?
Glass bottle.
Glass
bottle. Why, Lauren?
It's sexier. It's more high-end. It's sophisticated. We're very bold and shiny and polishy.
Okay. Dropper bottles, chic or annoying?
Annoying.
Chic.
Tell me why, David.
That's how it feels, so it comes across, to me at least.
Next one. Okay. So clinical branding or emotional branding?
Clinical. Emotional.
Okay, Lauren, why
we're
emotional?
We're done. Because that's how we speak to our audience. Anyone, it could be clinical, and I don't believe in clinical, but that's another story. We speak to our audience the way that they, you know, we tap into the emotion of it.
And David, are you thinking clinical because your engineering brain tells you like the products work?
Well, if you have to choose, then I go for clinical, because if it doesn't work, if the product doesn't perform, then you could apply all the emotions you want. But
okay, let's try another one. Minimal packaging or maximalist packaging?
Minimal.
Yes, that is so your brand, right? TikTok viral or beauty editor favorite?
Beauty editor favorite.
Okay. David, why?
It's more meaningful. Meaningful. It stays. It's more credible.
Okay. So now it's not a this or that. It's like a yes or a no. QR codes on packaging.
No.
No. Possible.
People feel really irate about QR codes.
Oh, really?
Kelsey, do you feel irate about QR codes on packaging?
Always.
Yeah. So, people have a lot of opinions about it.
I don't pay attention. I wouldn't pay attention to that on packaging.
Okay. What about samples? Yes or no?
Yes.
Do you have a big sampling strategy, David?
Not really.
Okay. But would you like one?
For retail spaces, nowadays, retails are almost, they need it. Most of our revenue comes from direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. So we do sampling. Every order goes out with something, a packet. So from that point of view, I'm all for it. Yeah.
Okay. Yes or no, tiny spatulas included in the box?
No.
Tell me why no, Lauren.
It's another tchotchke that's going to get lost.
Yeah.
It's a waste.
It goes in the garbage.
It goes in the garbage. Yeah.
Okay. Last one. AI skincare recommendations.
Yes.
Okay. Are you doing that now, David?
Not quite, but preparing for it. That's the future.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It was so fun. Thank you for walking down memory lane with me, Lauren.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Where Brains Meet Beauty with Jodi Katz. Tune in again for more authentic conversations with beauty leaders.